Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 7th, 2004. Today's session number is MES 2004-02. Today's speakers are Sonia Myers and Norma Crumwade. The lesson for today is Called to be Family, but what does that mean? Summoning out what we shall be as families, taking time for one another. Let's listen in.
Well, welcome. We're pleased to be offering session two in the series, Called to be Family, but what does that mean? And today we're going to focus on summoning out what we shall be as families, taking time for one another, which is certainly challenging and fits nicely, I think, into the Holden theme for this summer. Summoning out who we shall be in a variety of our the roles in our life, but also certainly in families and taking time for that. So the focus is this session will be on how families create health and stay healthy, the importance of time for the family, how they get it, what happens to health when they don't have it, how they create substitutions for it, and how they value it. We'll talk about all those things. And we'll be involving you, certainly, in the discussion. The link between family time and family health will be explained, as well as how the the role of the church in the family's larger system, the family's ecosystem, if you will. And we'll give some suggestions and draw from you some suggestions for carving space in the modern life for family time in terms of minutes, hours, and days to enhance health. So, if we could start with a prayer, that would be a good place to start, I think. Dear Lord, thank you for the time that we have now to focus on family and faith. We do so want to do this well. Come to us now and share with us your spirit to help us learn how to be shalom people. Help us to know how to bring peace, rest, safety, justice, happiness, health, welfare, wholeness, and sufficient prosperity to our families. We ask that you dwell in relationship with us, sharing your strengths in our family's journey. Help us also to live in harmony with ourselves, our partners in all relationships, and the earth. In your name we pray. Amen. Okay, come on in. One of the things we're going to, I'm Sonia Myers, and one of my roles, other than being a mom to a few of these people in the row back here, and a wife, is also that I'm a nurse and a nursing faculty person at Minnesota State University School of Nursing in Mankato, Minnesota, so a state university focusing most specifically on child health and adult health, as well as family health, and directing the graduate program for family nurse practitioners. So that's what I do when I'm not here, and far too much as I come here and realize, oh, how nice it is to have blank thinking. It's really nice to have to be able to go running and not be worried about something else other than just being here. So and Norma can.
I teach at the same facility, and I'm Norma Crumwady, and I kind of take off where Sonia leaves off. I do a lot with adult health and a lot with cancer and people at the end of life. So that will be the part that I can bring to you for this week.
So. Okay. So and later in the week, tomorrow we're going to be talking about families and chronic illness. And Friday, families dealing with and managing cancer in their lives. And Saturday morning, families experiencing grace at the end of life. So that's kind of the place we're headed. Well, for today, I'm going to give a few introductory remarks, and then we're going to be sharing some of our research findings from a study done in southern Minnesota with a group of families about family health. And so we'll share that with you and have some discussion about that, and then also be talking about some family time issues and strategies, hopefully some that we'll bring to you and many that you'll bring to us. On Monday, as we began together, one of the things we had people do was to give us activities that they do in their family that they believe show faith, that someone like me from outside could look at your family and say, oh, that's unique and different. There must be a reason behind what they're doing. And so many of you shared the kinds of things that you do, and some who weren't here shared those. And out of those activities, we pulled and created a list of values, which might be a little bit difficult to see because of the shine, but let me read those through. We, as a group in this place, discerned, I think, on Monday that some of the family values that we have in this place are hospitality. Boy, it just keeps shining from up there, so it may not be all that helpful. Honor, connection. We honor discernment that occurs in the family. Service, respect, diversity, grace, hope, humility, honoring of gifts, empathy, perseverance, inclusiveness, honoring accomplishment, and compassion. We think those are the values that we would like to have within our families, and some of you may want to add more, but I think those are really very interesting. One of the gentlemen who was here said, yes, but that's not what we're seeing in the media as Christian family values. There are some things up here that we think we might be expanding that traditional or at least culturally current definition. So with that as a backdrop, we're going to talk about the connections within family and family time today. The reason that we want some family time as faith-filled people is to help each other to develop these as gifts and develop these as values within our families. One of the things, too, that's also very important for us to share is that family is whoever the family says it is. Very broadly defined. Us, in our nursing practice, from the very beginning of my nursing practice, I've known that. You can't make any assumptions about who the family is. It's very important to clearly ask, who will be the decision maker here, and who do you want us to communicate with? And that's not very consistently defined. So we take that on ourselves as nurses, learning who it is that we need to connect with in the healthcare situation. So when we talk family, we're talking very broad. There is a connection between families, rituals, and their family's ability and the family's ability to thrive and prosper in our contemporary world. The natural drift of family life in contemporary America is towards slowly diminishing connection, meaning, and community, getting more distant as the years go by, or feeling that you're spending more time doing work than really enjoying each other. Bill Doherty is an author in Minnesota who has done a lot of work with family, and he's looked at family definitions over time. In his book, The Intentional Family, which unfortunately is not in the bookstore, but it is a helpful little book with some ritual ideas if you're interested in that. There are some other books that we'll talk about in a little bit, but that are in the bookstore, and very good ones. Bill Doherty said that as time has gone on, we've shifted the definitions and goals of family. We talked on Monday about kind of how families function. And he lists three specific families that have occurred over time. First, in the 40s and 50s, the institutional family, where the goal of life was stability and security, happiness was secondary, ending of marriage because you were not happy made no sense, because family life at that time was suited to a world of family farms, small businesses, tight communities, bound together with most often a common religious value set. Then we transitioned probably more in the 70s to a psychological family where the goal was based on personal achievement and more happiness than on family obligation and tight community bonds. A nuclear unit headed by a stable married couple with close emotional ties was still the focus and goal, with good communication and effective partnership in rearing children in a nurturing atmosphere. The overarching goal was satisfaction of individual family members, And the slogan that fits this group was, ask not what you can do for your family, ask what your family can do for you. So that was kind of the trend at that time in the 70s. And now we've seen a shift to a more pluralistic family organization where there's not necessarily any ideal that constitutes a good family. But the working assumption is that people create or find themselves in a wide variety of workable situations and configurations. And certainly you all know that, and we all see that in healthcare. The ideal is to let 1,000 family forms bloom as families creatively respond to the modern world. The goal is personal satisfaction plus flexibility, and the ability to shift more with the tides, and they even change boats if necessary, is kind of the mantra. Well, the result is we have the best of times and the worst of times as families. There are some challenges that are created by having all these choices. The worst is about the fact that there really are less supports for families. So less supports to make marriage work and for parents to make child rearing work. No longer is that neighborhood really supporting the marriage, really supporting the family in a traditional sense. And we're at a time where we have to recreate that. We create the highest expectations, however, for family life in any generation. Everything should happen in the family. The family should be the nucleus, and the family should be the one that does all this without the supports that have been there before. But we provide little guidance for how that's to occur. And then I would say, just as my example at the beginning was, we put up barriers to sustaining family rituals that can be there to support child rearing, or be there to support love connections, or be there to support community involvement. And that certainly creates a struggle. There's no other time in culture where the work week has flowed into the family week as much as it does now. And so I grew up on a dairy farm. I knew work, but we knew when to stop too. And there we had rituals and rhythms in those lives. My parents took a nap every day, and that was a time to calm down. I remember my mother reading the Bible every evening. I remember stopping when company came to the farm. You know, there were ways in which we could control some of that, but certainly we worked hard. There's no question about that. And, you know, during those harvest seasons, I was always worried about the amount of work that my family was doing because we were tired, we were exhausted. But this time in modern life, and I'm experiencing that as a nurse and as a mother and as a worker, is really quite unbelievable. There is no stop. There is no stop in many of our lives for work. The work just keeps asking to have parts of us. So that's the worst of it. But with the best of it is that we understand better what makes families work. There's far more research that's been done on how things are for families. Far more research that's been done on assets for youth, for instance, that are coming out of the family. We know some things now that we can focus on. We have unprecedented freedom to shape the kind of family life we want. And the choice that we have then is to be an intentional family. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And at this point in time, we're going to shift to the slides, which don't seem to be, there's nothing on, is there?
There's some other books that we like to recommend.
Yeah, there you go.
There's two that are really good about grace. Mary Schramm's Gifts of Grace. I'll pass that around. And this is one called The Seasons of Grace. We have a lot of family transitions, and that's what we found during our healthy interviews, is how families cope with these different transitions. and how they use their time to adjust with that. And William Bridges has put together a nice book on transitions. And as we talk later on in our presentation, we're going to talk about rituals that you have within your family. And this is to dance with God, and it connects the rituals along with the seasons of the church. So that might be something that's pretty useful for you as well. This is our research that we do as a research team. There's six of us who work together. And we go out to do interviews with families because they're the best ones and the experts that can let us know what's going on.
Oh, hey, I'm still a candidate on this line. I haven't.
So the aim of this study is really to take a look at the health experience within the family setting. And we're trying to build theory to help guide families as they're doing their experience of all the way from illness states to when they're really healthy. So we're trying to help them adjust and help with the transitions of their life. We take a look at the various disciplines. We really draw from all the different literature and family lifestyle, coping, to kind of help shape what we're doing. And what's nice about our research is we're able to really bring in the spiritual content with our interviews and listen to what these people have to tell in their stories. Definitions of family, we take a look at in the literature. The family health and family health experience, there's really very little in the literature, so there's not very much that really we can go to help guide us. Even as nurses, we haven't paid attention to family. We do really well with the individual. Like, I really know how to take good care of you, no matter what your illness is. But we have then started looking at, now how do we take care of you in the context of your family? So we're doing better with that. But really being able to take care of the whole family as the unit of which we're going to care for you when you access the healthcare system, we haven't got that together yet. So that's our goal. That's what we really want nursing and the healthcare profession to move to. David Olson, we talked a little bit about on Monday, helping families cope. Doherty, we talked about an intentional family, that the book's being passed around to you. And Sharon Denham is another nurse researcher who is in the Appalachian Mountains, who is helping us put together what it's like to have the social context of family. Those of you who are academic people and researchers will be happy to talk more in depth about this, but just in general, we do a qualitative study. That just means we go out and do a lot of interviews. We prefer to do them in their homes, because when we're in people's homes, as we talked about yesterday, we can see different objects in their homes, and we can see what the context of that living environment is, and how important the environment is for the family to operate. We ask very open questions, describe your family for us, what's it like to be in your family, what are good times, what are bad times. It's amazing how quickly the families will tell us their stories. Participants, we had rural families that we gathered from the newspaper, and we wanted to find somebody who didn't have any health concerns, because we wanted to really have a healthy family unit. We came up with 9 families, and those were the ranges of age, and pretty moderate income. We didn't have any really low social economic status. Being in southern Minnesota, it was all pretty white, Caucasian people that we interviewed. Our main theme that we found as we took a look and went through all the interviews was the transitions of families' lives. And we called it enduring acts of balancing. And this enduring acts of balancing, families will always be interact with different things that will cause the family to go out of balance. So if they have a stressed family member, then it takes an adjustment from the other family members to help with that person who is in stress. And so whenever the life transition would occur, that's also when some of those balancing acts would also need to happen. So at times of transitions, families engage in enduring acts of balancing. Because the family's identity is challenged, a process of negotiating family relationships occurs, as well as adjust a sense of family identity and continue to work towards the end goal of family caring. These are types of transitions that occur. And if you can kind of think in your own families, because we'll be asking for you to kind of share some of your stories at the end of this presentation, what happens to you in those times of transition? Births, deaths, various life events that you come into. We had a lady who shared yesterday or Monday about separation and divorce and becoming a one-parent family. This is an example out of their interviews. This is a married farmer, and a family of four describes the threat of a crop being destroyed to him. And I think I get all stressed out. I'm not going to show it. And the ones closest are the ones who are going to feel it. They are going to hear it, and it relates back to income and providing. And if you're not a farmer, farmers really have to be optimistic, because it doesn't take long, a couple seconds, and your whole crop can be destroyed from hail. And so that ability to balance, what do you do after you lost your livelihood in those few seconds? And during acts of balancing between work and family, all of us kind of struggle with that. The inside and outside commitments of families we found to be very important, because we found that people who are just very closed and only worry about their tight family really lose the opportunity to connect with outside people for support. So your outside commitments are important. Individual and family needs, the balance between those. The resources or lack of resources, and those are always changing. And resources, we just don't mean financial resources. We mean social support. Your neighbors, are they going to come to visit you? Are they going to come with a hot dish when you're have lost a loved one? Inside values and outside values. Are you able to maintain your Christian values both within your family and when you're going out into the community at large? And the time and lack of time. So that's what our focus is today. And during acts of balancing, this is a mother who is struggling with work and family. I just sat down to eat. The first bite, and they call from the hospital, "You have to come." I said, "It is my day off. It doesn't matter. We have just got 5 in labor and another one coming in, and we only have 2 delivery rooms." I was supposed to be home at 9 o'clock. Well, I got home at 2:30 in the morning because we had 7 deliveries. So the next day I hit them up and I said, "What happened to my Manicotti supper?" They said, "Mom, it was good." So it's that work that always continues to kind of be the biggest threat to family time. We have to be real intentional to hold on to that. Family identities is so interesting. Each family can really talk about their family identity. Maybe they haven't really identified it in the past, but when we go into interview with them, they can really come up and be very descriptive in what their family identity is. On Monday, we put a question out there for you to take back and ask your families, how would you define your family? Did any of you do that? Okay. You know there was homework with this. Priorities of work and family, the structural and qualitative family definition, the relationships of community, and the ability of family to seek outside information. A teenage son describes the process of changing family identity. "I mean, you will never be able to do that, have a perfect family, because life always throws you a curveball, and you know you have to take the good times with the bad times. If we can work through it and see another's point of view and what they are trying to bring to the family conversation." Negotiating the relationships within family, there's always a constant process of forming and reforming relationships. As new people come into the family, as people exit your family, the biggest key is through the communication that you have, trying to stay connected, the coalitions and collaborations that can be realigned within a family, sometimes the siblings are really tight that sometimes when they separate a little bit, those constantly shift. Power and control issues are renegotiated, the boundaries and roles, and coming to a common view of a crisis are important to negotiate those family relationships. This is a young wife, mother of two in her 30s, and she comes from a family who was not very tight, and so this is about family boundaries. I've learned a lot from Mary and Kyle because they are very family-oriented and very close. And my family loves each other, but we never spend this much time together. There is always someone around. It was hard at first because I am very independent, and I felt like it was mine, then I would do it. So she felt very responsible that she didn't want to accept help from any of her new family members. It was her role and her responsibility. And she found that if she could open up her boundaries a little bit and get help from other people, it made her life much easier. The continuous work of caring. Discipline is one of those elements that help with the work of caring in your family. The support of one another, listening, ensuring the safety of your family, planning for the future, and monitoring your member movement. The continuous work of caring example was a parent of two young children described safety. And before we went to the fair, Billy talked about not talking to strangers. And then I think she did not want to go, because the little girl kind of got scared. She really got scared. She wasn't even wanting to go to the fair. And then the father, I discussed it on the way home one night, and I felt bad because then she thought that she did not want to go to the fair anymore. I just wanted to have it in the back of her mind, kind of how she could protect herself, because you never know what you're going to run into at the fair. Facilitating the growth. Adapting to the various stimuli that affect your family, encouraging family adventures and vacations and trips, anticipating the inevitable and letting go, learning how to not worry. We talked about that a little bit on Monday. If you can just give it over to God, then you don't have to spend that time worrying. Acknowledging the good feelings of family times, acknowledging the differences within your family members, and incorporating the influences of your family of origin. But always remembering that you can overcome your family of origin if you're intentional about it. Facilitating growth. A 68-year-old woman described family adventuring with recognition of the influence of family of origin. We like to watch birds, go for walks, go for hikes. Since we come from a large family, we enjoy being together with our families and our friends. And it's kind of interesting, we see a little bit difference in these large families versus really small families. So we like to learn a little bit more about that, the family structure a little bit more. Getting a task with family done. A husband and father of two children describes the pull of family tasks and a daily grind of home maintenance integrated with child rearing tasks. When I'm at work, I think about what all needs to be done at home, like mowing the lawn. It takes 8 hours. And I would like to be inside and helping her with the dishes or washing clothes or picking up the tens of thousands of toys that are lying around. So you always have this constant pull of what you're actually doing, those things that are lying out there for you to do in the future. How do you, as a couple, really show and support each other in these family times? Because some of those duties are kind of laid out and divided in the family in a certain way. In summary, we really know that this enduring acts of balancing is pretty multifaceted. It's very content and context specific. Each family interprets that differently. But we really get through it by spending time together. The times of transition, the adjustments, and you really have to honor your family identity so that you're not having a threat to that and you can change and keep your family in identity intact. There's new ways of family caring are created to help facilitate the growth and to get the tasks of family done. Okay. I think we want to You want to go to the next question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what balancing acts do you, as a family, do when your family senses a challenge to your family life? What are the things that you do to adjust?
It's your turn. We learn things from all kinds of folks we integrate and interact with. And we thought that we'd like to hear what things you have to balance in your family's lives. And we're going to get to intentional time together in a little bit. But what kinds of things do you do now? Yes.
Well, I think by way of confession, our style is to take more on and then go faster to keep up.
Yes.
Which is okay for a short-term
strategy,
but we're, I think, I'll speak for myself, I'm guilty of just keep running faster instead of prioritizing.
Yeah.
Plus, and we have a hamster at home that reminds us.
Hamster, don't go anywhere.
And it just desperately tries to get out and is gnawing on the metal, and you're just going, why? Why are we doing this? Why is it chewing on the metal? It's not getting anywhere. Good.
And you had something up here you were saying.
I have no children at home. They're all grown. But we do have one daughter and a husband in town, and now three grandchildren, three boys. And I've noticed as each child is born, we have to do kind of realignment of how we're going to interact together, because having another child just changes the dynamics of our children's lives and how often we can access the grandchildren and what they need us to do for the grandchildren. It's always adjusting up and down. And I think sometimes we overcompensate and we think, well, if they need to be alone to adjust to this new baby, but then they don't really want to be alone, but they haven't really let us, you know, they need our support, they don't let us know. So we go back towards more centered thing, and that's, eventually it gets adjusted, but it takes it takes some time to do that.
Yeah, that's very true. Yes.
We're the parents of three teenagers, and we are finding a need to help them to just say no sometimes mm-hmm. to activities, or us saying no to help them say no mm-hmm. or something, because we found that pretty much any activity our children are in, everybody expects 100% of them. Mm-hmm.
Totally. And you too.
And we keep telling them, you can't do that. You can't give 100% of yourself to everything you're in. So trying to find those boundaries so that they have some space in their life. And we do too.
Right. And really, you know, for adolescents, they certainly take on the culture that says more, 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 do more, more, more. And maybe they see their parents role modeling some of that. But I think that's a very wise, you know, a wise approach is to really, and it is in discerning, helping them to discern what they can do and what they can truly intentionally take on and still be effective.
Good and not always be popular, but I think it is more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a struggle. It's intentional.
I didn't realize one thing we're being successful at until I sat here and reflected on all our commitments. What we have been able to pull off is that where one is committed by obligation or whatever, area of interest, we all get involved. If there's a soccer tournament somewhere, we all go. Uh-huh. There was an Eagle Project this year, we all got involved. I run a state tournament. We all were involved. I recruited my kids as judges, my husband as a judge. So I was just reflecting on the things that we are committed to because we really are passionate about it because of interest. We all get involved.
Mm-hmm. And you have time together.
It's juggling, but it's really kind of supporting each other in our areas of interest. It's hard to give those up.
Yeah.
So the tension sidebar there.
Right, yeah. I mean, and the tension is between spending time doing those things and then the one maybe the one who's not all that excited about being at that event. But you know, then if they have their time too, fits together. Others, yes.
I have a different situation than what I've heard so far in the room today. I'm a single parent with a 17-year-old daughter.
Uh-huh.
And I'm Christian, and my daughter, like her dad, is Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And but she comes to church with me, and actually she knows the Old Testament inside and out, so they love her. She teaches the little kids.
Good reason.
The Old Testament. And she can even read it in Hebrew to them. But I find that with, I work full time, and I find that with her busy life as an upcoming high school senior, that we need to be intentional about simply having dinner. And because we don't always do it, I have to confess, we don't always, and I have a friend who has a daughter who has anorexia, and the counselor said, have family meals, that's the most important thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I learned this about my friend's, her daughter, I've been trying to be more intentional about just my daughter and I sitting down together and having a meal and even cooking it together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little crazy in our culture when something that is that simple and basic to family life becomes, needs to be an intentional act.
Yeah. Isn't that true? I mean, that's why I said the best of times, the worst of times. I mean, it's really quite astounding. Three meals a day, well, I had together with my family when I was older. It's just, it's a different place. But thanks for sharing how you juggle that. And as you were talking about the little hamster life, I was thinking about, there is a name for that. We've talked about that in our family. That's first order change, which means you just spin faster. But second order change might be your example of finding, or as you were talking about, as the new family members blend in, finding new ways of doing things, maybe dumping something else out, because but it's hard when you love what it is that you're doing to give that up. But there are some reasons to give it up if there are some things you're not getting a chance to get to as a family because you're on the hamster wheel. Yeah, in the back there.
Some of you may have been up here a few summers ago when Dorothy Bass was one of the teaching coordinators, and I don't know if you've read her, the book she edited, Practices of the Faith, or what is that called?
Yes, Practicing the Faith. Yes.
And one of the chapters she identifies, or somebody else writes it, but saying yes and saying no as actually a Christian practice,
right.
Learning how to say yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of it that way. That just seemed like, well, of course you have to know what to say yes to, know what to say no to, but that's one thing that we're just learning, that my husband and I, in terms of balancing it, there are seasons when one of us is in the yes season, so the other one has to be in the no season.
Good point.
Yeah, and it helps you feel, I mean, I think I was in the no season first when we got married, and, you know, as you're doing the 10,000th load of laundry, you're thinking there's got to be more to life than this, but then to know that there will be a yes season that comes too, and that he'll have the no season.
Yeah.
So, I found that book really helpful.
Yes, I agree. I have that in my shelf at home too. But there is another enduring act of balancing the yes season and the no season. I think that's an excellent example of how you found a way, maybe with some resources, and that's the gift that we have here in this place to talk about these issues. To go out with some new ideas of how to create family time. I remember one of the, very subtle, it might have been after that summer even, we always used to settle in at night and for just laughter and whatever, I don't know, watch the David Letterman show. Well, you can't do that every night and be alert and ready to go the next day. So just a little thing is when we got home from Holden, we decided to not watch the David Letterman show anymore. You know, seems like a little thing, but it was a second-order change thing at that point in time because it then allowed some more space. And that is why it's the Christian thing, because it allows you some space to focus on those values that you find dear and important. So, yeah, good. Well, let's see. So, the response, then, of the Christian family is to maintain and increase its sense of connection, meaning, and understanding of faith in the community over the years. So, one of the things that we do, and we have found the families that we're talking with find helpful, and as we pull together resources and work with families, we find that those intentional rituals are important, like you're talking about dinner, a dinner. It has a predictable pattern. It creates a time for connection. Even doing dishes creates a time for connection together. Creating an identity. You become, as John was talking about here on Monday, if other friends liked to come to his family because they had this identity of being a welcoming family. And it may be that identity of dinner together creates an identity of a family that honors each other. Family in which each other are honored. And rituals help you to enact your values. So we're going to just talk about three different types of connection that are kind of typical within Christian families or within families in general that are seemingly somewhat helpful. And Norma, would you pass out that checklist? There's a checklist that's coming around, and if you would be willing to share with each other, we'll do that. There's a checklist that you can do with your families, and it helps to go through three specific types of connections or rituals. There are the connection rituals, things like walks or going to Holden together, or in our family we have these very heavy, very Holden-esque kind of whole wheat potato dumplings every Christmas called Clue. That's our thing. We have Clue every year. My husband, the pastor, makes it, puts it in the boiling pot before we go to Christmas Eve services and gets all of that kind of thing going. Friday night pizza, Easter baskets on Easter morning, those kinds of things that are kind of connection rituals. It's still fun when those Easter baskets are discovered in the same closet that they've been discovered in for years on Easter Sunday morning. Or this year it was actually Saturday morning because we are in transition. We have a new member of our family, John, and his family, he and Heidi were going to be spending Easter Sunday with them, so we Easter baskets were on Saturday morning instead. Love rituals, things that you do together as partners. Wednesday morning bagels once a week, or one of the habits that we have in our family is that we drape crepe paper streamers on the door of the person whose birthday it is that day, and so they wake up to crepe paper streamers, or anniversary dinners, birthday dinners, those kinds of things. Community rituals are things like going to church on Sunday, weddings, funerals, community rituals to give and gain support. The healthiest families give their communities and receive support back in good measure. So as you look at this checklist, take 2 minutes and just spin through the list and see what your thinking is about some things that you do or don't do, or just ideas that you might come to from looking at this list. Thus far, in looking at them, what have you discovered?
Mostly pluses.
Well, that's a good thing. And so, how have you learned those pluses? How have you learned it over time to do those kind of things? Well,
from a different generation, and our generation, I really believe it's our generation was different than today's generation.
Sure.
And it's we just did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a very, very conscious decision.
Yeah, intentional.
Well, it was what we knew. It was set by example.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Our parents, but we were also trying to set a good example. Mm-hmm. It was just done. Mm-hmm.
Now we must say our kids are grown and they live a long, long way from us.
Uh huh.
But we do. through the internet or phone.
Yeah,
or
new
airplane.
Ways of
keeping.
More airplane.
Yeah, new ways of connecting. Yeah. Yeah, it's like when I grew up, we went to grandma's house on Sunday for dinner.
Right.
Well, you know, we don't do that anymore. And so time and space has changed some of that. And so they don't have that same kind of support, but maybe they've created new kinds of support.
But it's interesting, we do have some traditions, like, you know, stupid tradition, lutefisk on Christmas Eve.
That is not stupid.
But the kids know about that and they think about that.
Yeah.
Tom and before Ludovic, we had Tom and Jerry before, you know, on Christmas Eve. And both our sons, when they come home on Christmas Eve, they make the batter for the Tom and Jerry.
Ah, yeah, there you go. Good. What else over here did you learn? Yes.
Well, I was just going to comment similar, and I was so happy to hear you say that, because we had a lot of pluses on the list. When we were the moving force,
uh-huh.
Our kids were all at home, and uh-huh. We had family night. We all, now we're one of the balls being juggled, and that's a whole different ballgame.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just the two of us,
point.
But we've got a son in the military, and they're off here, and we've got another son who recently, well, a couple years ago, got married. Now they've got their little one, and I want them to come home at Christmas, and none of these kids have been to our house. I had this vision of grandma being home at Christmas,
yeah.
And my son says, yeah, no, I still remember coming down and seeing the presents under the tree, and no, we're never coming home. And I went, oh, man.
we have to
refocus that whole vision,
yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
and it was a wonderful memory for him, so he's going to repeat it in his house.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's been a real struggle for us
sure.
To all of a sudden keep thinking, this isn't going to happen, so what are we going to do in place of it?
Yeah.
This isn't going to happen.
Yeah, so you are the family now.
So we're the one that's being juggled out here by them.
Right, and so, but you are having really to create new ways
mm-hmm.
that
because we're also, like they said, we're of the family where you went home to mom's or you went home to mom and dad's or, you know, and they don't feel any of that.
Yeah.
They're feeling much more focused on creating their family
right
now.
Yeah, because, you know, they're living in that world that's, gosh, they've got Christmas off together and they're staying home and staying put, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yes.
The Christmas thing was a hard thing.
Yeah.
Because I had, 2 years ago, it was the first Christmas I haven't spent either at the home of my mom or our home.
Uh-huh.
And, but I thought we wanted to have our kid do Christmas once. With one kid, it was easy enough to go to grandma's. But when we had two, then we started staying home. So if they want to start that, I guess we have. We want to see them.
Yeah.
We'll go.
Yeah.
You go.
Yeah.
So they'll be flying.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we take care of that, right? So what's magic about a certain date? We've had Christmas Eve, wonderful Christmas Eve, on December 17th.
Yeah.
We've had Easter.
Yep.
Yep. Last year we had Easter with an Easter egg hunt and everything on Palm Sunday.
Yep.
See?
Yep.
Because the families then, our children can go to the other families then, or have theirs at home.
Yeah.
And they come in the door, and we wish them Happy Easter, and then next week we go and celebrate it at church.
Yeah.
But it's the family time together, and that's what's the important part.
Well, you're creating a new way.
Yeah.
You know, it's that second order change idea where you just can't pedal any faster.
The last 3 years, we've had Thanksgiving on Sunday.
Well, and why we do this? Why are we doing this? We're doing this so we can have time for this. And so that's what's important about it. It's really not about the dinner, I mean, necessarily. It's about the time, to create time to talk at the table about these things or to have those ritual times for focusing on faith or going to church together as a group. My family, my husband's a clergyman, and we've not been home for Christmas Eve since I was married, you know. So we have created different ways to do that, and most of it has been that we are home, in our own home. But now we have, you know, we have new family transitioning, and we'll just have to be more flexible about those kinds of things. What else? Yes.
I'm in the same kind of boat with holidays, you know, and I always thought, hey, it's my turn. Because we always went to my parents or my husband's parents, and I'm being skipped with the turn because my kids want to be at their own house for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, but we're trying to do this same type of thing, but it's hard.
Yeah,
because it is. You think about the day, and for all holidays, you know, it's just hard to do that.
How much juggling you can do.
Well, yes.
Not to shift gears away
from
the holidays,
ahead.
But you know, I'm going to be 42 here really soon, and actually, when my brother and I were growing up, we were much busier than our kids are today.
Okay.
And I think that was by design. But I think...
Working.
Well, no. I think it has to do with where we live.
Okay.
There's not much community.
Uh-huh.
And I could do things, Boy Scouts, sports, confirmation, begrudgingly. All those things I could do, and my parents had a sense that I was going to be okay in my community.
We were safe. Yeah.
We live in a community which is mostly, we don't live in a gated community, but we're surrounded by gated communities. And they're very, very inclusive. And I can't, exclusive. And they're inclusive to themselves. But I mean, it was easy for Dad to drop me off at baseball practice because he knew I'd get a ride home.
Right.
He'd say, you know, he wouldn't even have to ask. He'd say, who needs a ride home? And three kids would raise their hand,
yeah.
And somebody would volunteer to take them home. And one night it might be my dad.
Yeah.
But today, it's not going to happen.
You're very right.
And I mean, and that's even different from my dad's generation,
right.
Which was, you know, rural Midwestern. Everything was pretty family oriented. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the next farm was a good 15-20 minute walk.
Yeah.
So I think the change in community has put more stress. And sometimes I wonder, it's like, why aren't you doing something other than sitting in front of the television? It's because there's no opportunity from the schools, there's no opportunity from the community, and we live in a car society where we can't, and I'm not going to let him ride his bike, because you know, he'll get hit by a car.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Really good point about the connection with the community, too, though. You're right in that much of what your experience was that you were automatically integrated into the community as a family member, and that is not the same.
No.
And you, as a parent, probably have much more responsibility for creating an opportunity for community where you, as a child, probably just did it as a kid. So, way more responsibility for doing that. Yeah, good point. Oh, one more.
In going through this list, in the area of community, and I came to the area of recreation and education groups and activities, and you realize that our culture now, we used to be able to go outside our back door and the neighborhood baseball game would take place and such. Now it's all organized sports. It's hard to be part of a baseball game. You join the local association or whatever, and we become so much more structured as a family, dictated by when those schedules take place.
Yeah.
And our families end up driving all the time.
Yeah.
We can't just go in the backyard and learn how
yeah.
to and yeah. get, and the kids have their community group neighborhood.
And there was one other thing.
I just was thinking this is perfect timing for us because we have one son and he's 10. And first of all, because of somewhat ill family dynamics and our parents' generation, we're not connected with them at all. And so our son hasn't had the advantage of that. However, he's had the great advantage of being very involved in our church community in Salt Lake City. And he's lived there his whole life and has many surrogate grandparents and it's been very supportive. Well, we just moved to a new town and we've only been there 3 weeks before we came here. And we're realizing we're going to be beginning this whole support net, structuring, trying to integrate our new careers and new family life and how to work that to keep ourselves, the three of us, intact and strong and supported, and needing to begin the new church community and support network and get into Scouts and all. We've been looking forward to it, but I'm realizing it's going to be quite a time of transition to get reconnected.
And I think hopefully, you know, you're having some intention about what is it do we want out of these new relationships, new connections, new activities, rather than just to be in an activity. Mm-hmm. One more.
Oh, I was just going to share a perspective. What we do is such a gift to our children because they truly will turn around and do it. I believe that. I am doing everything my parents did. Now, that's probably gross generalization. We can have such effect on our grandkids by really staying focused on the traditions and rituals that are important to us, because they truly will turn around and our kids will do it for our grandkids. Yeah.
And I think the caveat that I always have is that I want us always to remember that there are families that don't have some of those choices. And I always have tension about that because I work with them and I want them to have those rituals. So I think we in our communities also can not only be models for our own children, but for the children of others or for the adolescents of others or for other family members, because we know so much. The research is so clear about the value of intentional rituals for children and for adolescents and families and that kind of thing. And I believe that we have a clear responsibility as Christians to welcome others into that as well. So, good point.
And I can tell you, my kids will have their kids open matching pajamas on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
In those pictures. My mom did it all growing up, and we're doing it now too.
Yeah. One last
comment before lunch.
When our kids were little, we brought them to Holden. This year, we brought our kids and our grandkids to Holden. And already a couple of our grandkids have said, when they grow up and get married and have kids, yeah, they're bringing their kids to that's rich.
Yay! Yay. All right, well, excellent. Thank you so much for your involvement, and I look forward to engaging with some of you tomorrow.